There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 993, May 22nd, 2023, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Brooke Benton in Bologna, a rainy night in Imola, big bucks for Bond from Beijing, Yuki mops it up, GP2 engine on pole at Indy with a Spanish driver. We shall explain muy gladly. Back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, it's been 60 years since Parnelli Jones won the Indy 500. Yuki Tsunoda caught being nice. LCH seen purchasing The Idiot's Guide to Conversational Italian. And this week's interviews, we've got Jagger Jones, or Jagger Jones, and Christian Rasmussen. Of course, they're part of the Indy car world, and Nasser will have all the details surrounding those two great drivers. Also, I must get into this. We need your contributions, your donations that show love and pay the bills. That keeps this program on the air. And now that we're at the end of May, it's almost time to pay the pusher man for cloud space. So, $1, $2, $3, $4. Those things work great, and I beg you, please, just click on it. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. The excitement of Indy 500 qualifying. We've got Ralf Schumacher on left field. We've got Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari, according to the press. I'm telling you, there's so much going on when there's nothing going on.
Well, what was supposed to go on was the San Marino, Emilia Romagna, made in Italy, and who knows where it was supposed to be manufactured. But what we have here is a failure to race. Cool hands and minds did the right thing by cancelling the Grand Prix long before accusations of cash is king can be made, because live and learn is a smart thing. Do you concur, Senor?
Yes, indeed. Instead of going through some weird, really scary stuff, cancel everything, donate some dollars, give Yuki Tsunoda a broom, and we'll be done with it.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, this was some serious flooding, and there are casualties. And speaking of donation, Ferrari donated €1 million to the relief effort, and Formula One has also matched that amount, so that's very good. And let's hope, for the sake of locals, natives, things return to normal as soon as possible, because, you know, quite a few people have been affected. And, you know, I read that Stefano Domenicali is from this area, Imola. He was born and raised in Imola. So, and I might be in that area next month, Signor Rogers. I'm thinking of making a run to the Ferrari Museum, as long as it's not underwater. But yeah, this is some interesting news, hot news, a rumor coming that Ferrari has contacted the local Merrill Lynch branch in Milano, and they are getting bullish on Mr. Lewis Hamilton. And apparently this guy, you know, the head of Fiat, I'm forgetting his name right now, John Elkann, young whippersnapper, and his brother is out of control. But it looks like they are trying to get him to sign for Ferrari for next year and willing to offer 50 million, I don't know if it's pounds or euros, but once you get to million, it really doesn't matter. It is a lot of money. So do you think Lewis Hamilton will go there?
I do, and it's obvious why. Well, Fernando Alonso is getting so much attention, so many accolades for doing this leap of faith, going to Aston Martin, which was a midfield team. Let's face it, gambling is definitely part of life, and Fernando threw the dice, and lo and behold, he's getting all this attention. He's on the podium every other day. Lewis, you know, he's floundering, and George is sort of smacking him around. So he's thinking a little Italiano, a little marinara, and he could become the new Fernando, next year's Fernando. So I can dig it. And it would be exciting because, let's face it, he is even talking about how boring it is because he's not dominating and it's not fun when he's not dominating and when Max is dominating. But just think how much more exciting it would be if he was at Ferrari and Leclerc was at Mercedes and then all of a sudden Leclerc is crashing. And, you know, because I know what's going on here. Frederick knows that if Lewis was in the car, there's no crashy. So it's a potent attraction because Lewis makes few mistakes. So it's exciting. I love the press. In the end, it's probably all fake, but it gives us hope for something exciting. What Fernando brought to Aston Martin can be done to other teams. And that's the other thing, you know, the excitement of a new team, a fresh toilet. Oh my goodness, it's like a brand new pair of Hanes underwear.
Oh, wow, you're going deep here. Another positive of, or maybe the only positive of the race cancel at Imola, this is the only way Max and Red Bull were not going to have a winning weekend. But we have a street fight coming this weekend. Who takes the pole means will take the victory. And they are talking about a Pani's moment in Monte Carlo. There might be some rain. So we'll have to see how it goes because Monte Carlo is not too far from Italy, as we all know. And I think if Checo takes pole and Max is second, I can see Barcelona 2016 and Machismo winning in Monte Carlo. And I have not double-checked on this, but I don't think he has won in Monte Carlo since 2007 as a McLaren driver, which was a very impressive winning performance over his teammate. And who could that be? So that will be very, very exciting. What's your take on the race coming up, Senor?
Well, I want to talk about the race that we lost at Imola briefly because there's going to be a solution in the future. They will not cancel the race. They'll simply pay ChatGPT to make a race, come up with winners with the formula that they're given, and for $20 million, half price, they will make a Grand Prix, we'll watch it, and Max will win. So ChatGPT is in our future. Let's face it, Monaco is my favorite weekend. It's my birthday weekend. It's exciting for me. It's France. And it's gonna. There's just so much history oozing out of the pores. I'm hoping it gets exciting. I'm hoping Leclerc won't crash in a vintage or a new car. And like I said, like you said, like Fernando thinks that, yes, Fernando could grab this with Checo and Max ahead, canceling each other out. I've checked. There is possible rain showers during the weekend. So stuff can happen. Somebody could get stuck at the Tabac curve. So I'm pumped up.
I don't think any driver can make the claim, rightful claim that Charles Leclerc does, that he can walk to his home Grand Prix from his home.
That's true.
You've been to Monte Carlo, Senor?
Yes, he lives right there, and then he's got family in Menton. It's a beautiful community, Nasser.
Yes, I have never been there. I've been to Nice, and I saw signs for Monte Carlo. My free bird days are coming soon, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to visit. My number one priority is to visit all the tracks, and I have done most of them, that were on the schedule in 1973 when I started Formula One racing. And some of them are missing. Ironically, I've never been to Watkins Glen, so that has to be taken care of pronto. So see how it works out.
Let me give you a tip. When you're by the exit sign that says Monte Carlo, or it says Gueux by Rass, or it says Watkins Glen, you take the exit forcibly. You do it subconsciously, but you do it. Because especially Monte Carlo, as soon as you take the exit, you're cruising into town. Hey, all of a sudden you're on the track and you can feel it. You can feel it. You see Trulli ahead and you see David Coulthard behind you. It's exciting.
You know Alan McNish, right?
Of course. I got his autograph when he was at Renault.
Alan McNish has always been very nice to me, and I've met him many times. We've interviewed him a few times. You know, he lives in Monte Carlo, and I know somebody who knows him very well, this driver, Harry Tinknell. And, you know, he's involved with Audi. So I've been thinking that if I go to Monte Carlo when there is no race and Mr. McNish is available, I will ask him, you know, if I can have some local guide and a cappuccino with the wee Scotsman. And that's one of my many, many items in my bucket list, which is shrinking pretty fast with age. But we'll see what we can do. But right now, we have to talk about the Brewmeister. Yuki mops it up. Alpha Tauri driver Yuki Tsunoda has finally done something that has pleased everybody. Pictures are floating on the interweb showing him mopping up in the streets of Faenza. This is the town which was also affected by the flooding and where his team is based out of. So any comments on that, sir?
It was loving, and you could tell that he did have a good mommy.
Yes, and I wonder, being Japanese, if this broom was electronic or totally digital.
No, but you should have seen the toilet.
Okay, sir, now we come to Ralph Schumi slams Dr. Marco. Ralph has an ongoing beef with Gunther Steiner. Now he has a cow with Red Bull's master of the abattoir, Dr. Helmut Marco. Ralph said, and I quote, Franz Tost, as the team manager and team principal, initially wanted a different driver because he knows that it takes 2 to 3 years to get drivers up to speed. The driver available meeting this requirement was Mick Schumacher. It seems that Helmut Marko has a problem with the Schumacher name. End quote. It must be said Franz Tost was looking after Ralph when he raced in Japan before his Formula One days. What say you on this, Ralph, on Dr. Marko?
Well, this is a classic chip on the shoulder syndrome. We've seen it before and we'll see it again. Ralph needs to get a good psychiatrist, get some therapy, and just shake it off, dude. Shake it off.
And I heard that Jackie Stewart was not the only one who was mishandled in the Miami paddock. Ralph also was roughed up pretty badly, according to him.
He was beaten up a little bit. Ralphie boy came in wearing diesel jeans and thought he was cool. They just showed him, hey, this is the ghetto, brother.
You know I was actually, you probably know this, the race, Miami Grand Prix, is in Miami Gardens. That's the name of the town. And it was recently listed as one of the high crime areas of USFA. But, you know, there is crime even in Beverly Hills, so where are you going to go?
Well, not only that, but Miami promised that they would hire locally. So you're getting, you know, the bouncers, the dudes that know how to take care of business when there's some invaders in town.
Foreigners.
Exactly.
Because, you know, when you put in people who have no clue who Ralph Schumacher is or Jackie Stewart is, or they probably would have treated Ayrton Senna or Alain Prost the same way. But that, what can you do? But hopefully, you know, I think it's a great event. I really enjoyed going there first year, and I hope they will kink out the issues and it will be all right.
Well, there's a new program, Lewis Hamilton sponsoring it. It's called Street Smarts for F1 people. And they learn all the tactics of how, you know, you behave and handle street kind of warfare.
Yeah, with the crowd he's hanging out, I'm sure he can do a pretty good job on that. And is he not going to hold a clinic on how to dress nicely and impress the high society?
I'm telling you, he's got that down. And listen, he's not wearing Coco Chanel, but that's cool.
Well, he has a contract with Tommy Hilfiger, right?
Mercedes does, and when he's in Mercedes mode, he must wear Tommy. But, you know, Tommy has long history. We don't even want to mention that. So I think once he leaves the campus, as they want to call it now at Mercedes, you know, they're spending more money to make people happy, and now they want a more inclusive. You know, they probably went to Apple and Cupertino and Google, and they said, you know, this is so much more loving. So more money is being spent at Mercedes for this campus, and that way people feel good hanging out.
Yes. Name of the game is winning. Whether you are operating from a timber shed like Cantarell, or you're a garagista like Frank William, you got to deliver on the track. You know, all this talk of $1 billion investment and hiring this, hiring that, sports psychologist and all the PR people and FDBs of Formula One. Why don't you just win a damn race and prove your point? That's my mantra. Okay, so now we move on to Hungry for More. A new Formula One spec track, I think it's called Balaton Park Circuit, has opened in Hungary. Now, this is interesting. The man behind it is Chanoch Nissany. Once upon a time, he drove a Minardi at Hungaro Ring. His son is racing in Formula 2 by the name of Roy Nissany, and he is as rapido as Papito. Means going nowhere real fast in the world of motor racing. But it's good that the Hungarian people, Magyars, have a new track. It's not too far from Hungaroring, and we will see how this thing pans out. Now, sir, there was no race at Imola, as we all know. Did you miss this race, sir?
I did, but I had I knew it was going to be canceled. I think I texted you a couple of days before it was officially done. Yeah, but like you said, it was such the correct call that you don't have that gut feeling. You know, there was stuff to watch on YouTube. The Poe Grand Prix was exciting. And there you have it.
Yeah, I did get your text. And when you put muy importante and it was a text, I knew it was fat, not fake news. But I did miss the race. The track is beautiful. I've been to this track. This track is so beautiful. There are houses there. And on the inside section of the track, there is a school. And man, you got to check out the Aqua Minerale section, you know, the one that goes down and comes up on Alta Variante. Oh man, that's just... And that's where my friend and I, we watched the race in 2005 when Monty had a Walrus Nose Williams. And Shumi won the race. And JP led the first 12, 14 laps from pole position. Actually, that was Jenson Button's first pole position. So since there was no racing at Imola, but we are blessed, there is a lot of history at Imola. So today, we'll take a little bit look at what's happening or what has happened there. While the track hosted many San Marino Formula One Grand Prix races, the first Formula One championship event was in 1980, the Italian Grand Prix, the only time it did not take place at Monza, and winner was Nelson Piquet. And prior to this, at the track, they also held, I think it was called the Enzo and Dino Ferrari Grand Prix or something like that. It was a non-championship race. In 1985, local paisan Elio De Angelis won the race without leading a single lap. As winner on track, Alain Prost was disqualified for an underweight car by 2 kilograms. And this is the race. I remember watching this race, and several cars ran out of fuel in the closing laps, which is ridiculous. 1989, Gerhard Berger had a fiery accident in his Ferrari at Tamburello. I was watching race live at 5 in the morning in Cali, and this was as serious and scary as Kubica's accident in Canada in 2007. Sir, do you remember watching this race live?
Yes, very scary.
Yeah, when his car caught fire and there was, you know, a few seconds before anybody got there, I thought he was the next Bandini, but I'm glad it did not work out that way. And we all know what happened at the same track 5 years down the road. Ayrton Senna started from... This is an amazing... You know, I remember reading this many years ago, and I said, you know, this guy was something. Senna started from pole position 8 times every year from 1985 to 1991 and his final race in 1994. His 1987 pole in a Lotus was the first ever pole position for an active suspension car. Michael Schumacher, with 7 wins, is the most successful driver at Imola. And who can forget the 1982 race between Ferrari drivers Gilles Villeneuve and Didier Pironi? Many in the media call this the great betrayal by Pironi. All you have to do is watch the race and come to your own conclusion. Now, some drivers got their maiden wins at Imola. Heinz-Harald Frentzen and Ralf Schumacher both scored their first wins here. Frentzen for Williams Renault in 1997 and Ralf for the same team but with BMW Power in 2001. But the most famous victory in the San Marino Grand Prix at Imola is from 2005 when El Machismo held off Michael Schumacher lap after lap for an unbelievable victory. Now, to give equal time to both sides, it must be said the following year at the same place, Michael Schumacher returned the favor. But still, Machismo's victory is mega because he was very young and Michael was Red Baron, the greatest driver of all time, and people thought he was god of Grand Prix racing. So to beat that guy in Italy, 90 miles from Ferrari's factory, absolutely Machismo. And sir, speaking of Machismo, he has been quoted as saying this year he will have the best chance to win a race at one of these three circuits: Monaco, Budapest, where he won his first Grand Prix in 2003, and Singapore. When I heard him say Singapore, it really piqued my interest. And I say, Mr. Nelsinho Gorbachev, tear down that wall. I am convinced Machismo will find a way to win a race this year, just like the Honey Badger did at McLaren. Max may disagree, but time will tell. Sir, where do you think he will have his win?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen this weekend in Monaco. It has to. He wants to get it done, and he wants glamour at the same time.
It will be an incredible thing if he can win there. But if he does not get there, I don't think he's going to win a total wet race, because he's very good, but Max and Lewis are a wee bit better in the rain, that's for sure. But some changing conditions or some last-minute kablamo from one of the Red Bulls, he's in. It'll be very, very popular victory when he wins, that's for sure. Okay, sir, now we move on to, speaking of his team, big bucks for Bond. Aston Martin turning Chinese. I really think so. Aston Martin has announced it. £234 million investment by China's Geely Motor Company. They will now become Aston Martin's third largest shareholder. Geely will acquire about 42 million ordinary shares from Aston Martin's largest stakeholder, which is Mr. Lawrence Stroll's company called UYEW Tree, and according to Lance Stroll, this is one tree where money grows in billions and billions. Geely also owns Lotus and Volvo, so they are on the General Motors program from the 1980s, by brands that don't make money and don't sell a lot of cars. And by the way, the second largest shareholder is the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. The name is interesting, Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. Basically, the money goes into the royal family personal bank account. What say you?
You gotta love those Saudis, huh?
Yes. Well, we have Dr. Marco, but you know, a lot of Dr. Marco recently made a statement. Formula One has to keep its traditional market, and which is Europe. And now, I think Gerhard Berger was quoted as saying that Formula, and he was not talking about Arabianization, but he was referring more to Americanization. His thing was the main base of Formula One is Europe, and the European tradition should be kept. But you know, no matter how much you like something, the times are changing and we all have to adapt whether we like it or not. Where I have a cow is going to places like Azerbaijan and not to Germany and Argentina, where there's tremendous history and passion for motorsports. But you know, what can we do? What we can do is talk about Mercedes on fire, not the way they wanted. A Mercedes AMG 1, which I guess is valued at $2.7 million, was reduced to ashes while being towed on the M6 motorway in UK. The engine of the car, supercar, exploded, And apparently this is the same engine that is used in their Formula One car, the W14. Now, this car was owned by Lewis Hamilton. And interestingly, there were only 275 Mercedes AMG ones that were made, and Lewis has two. And very nicely, he bought one for his Papito, Anthony. And Mercedes have started an investigation to find out what caused the switched-off hybrid engine to blow up while it was being transported. Now, this is very bizarre. An engine turned off blows up. At least Pinto had to be rear-ended before doing a Dante. And speaking of Dante, I think we need a break and some acqua minerale.
That's a good idea. We need some aqua to pour on this fire, which is hilarious. And, you know, I want to know one thing. What do you do with a Mercedes AMG One valued at $2.7 million? I know what to do. Hang on. The first thing you do is you put your $350,000 watch on before you get in the car. I'm a simple man with simple tastes.
Yes. And then you go to East End of London. If you're in England, or if you get the car transported here, you take the, you know, Ventura Freeway, take the Slauson cutoff, and head straight into Pacoima or Rancho Cucamonga.
And don't forget, if you're in Cucamonga, you've got to buy the avocados. On that note, I think it's time to take a break, so we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I am Takuma Sato. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. We are going every which way today, but let's start Motorsports Mondial with one of two interviews we have today. Unfortunately, we could not get Jagger and Evans for the show, but we do have Jagger and Rasmussen. Jagger Jones is the son of PJ Jones, who you mentioned won the Indy 500 in 1963. Very controversial victory because his car was leaking oil, and Colin Chapman, because his driver, Jim Clark, was chasing him, wanted his PJ's cars to be a black flag, which it was never done. And that's the way it goes sometimes. Now, PJ Jones is the Papito, is the son of Parnelli Jones, and is the Papito of Jagger Jones. Jagger is based in North Carolina and going to university there studying business, which is a smart idea. Now, this conversation took place in Sweet Home, Alabama a few weeks ago, and I hope our listeners enjoy this chit-chat with this young, talented American racer. Okay, folks, we're here in beautiful Barber Motorsports Park with young, talented young American, Mr. Jagger Jones. Jagger, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you?
I'm very good, very good. We're here at Barber right now, and we're about ready to go for our race today, so just getting amped up, ready to go.
Your first name gives me the impression that your dad, PJ, is a fan of Rolling Stones. Is that correct?
No, it's funny because a lot of people think that, but my parents really said I wasn't named after Mick Jagger, more just Jones being a more common last name than wanting to stick with a J name. We have a lot of J names in our family, and make something interesting, too.
Sure. Okay, now, we both have the same favorite restaurant. Question is, do you prefer double-double with sauteed onions or regular onions at In-N-Out?
Yes, In-N-Out is my favorite. Being an Arizona boy, that's kind of after high school football games or pretty much anywhere, In-N-Out's the go-to place. I don't eat cheese, but I do go for the double meat and extra sauteed onions.
Very good. You're studying in NC, North Carolina. Do they have In-N-Out there?
No, we don't. All we got is Cookout and Bojangles and places I usually try to stay away from. So when I get to go back home to Arizona, it's a good treat to have In-N-Out.
Exactly. I miss them too here in Florida. I mean, I live in Tampa, you know. Okay. I followed your dad's career when he was driving for Dan Gurney, and your grandpa, Parnelli, is a great Indy legend. Who has been a bigger influence in your racing life?
I think for me, I've always kind of looked up to my grandpa a lot, just because he was kind of the the person that started the Jones family legacy in motorsports, and obviously what I really respect about my grandpa is how successful he was, not only in IndyCar, what he's most known for in the Indy 500, but he won 11 NASCAR races, Baja 1000s, Trans Am, and he was a guy that could get in any race car and go fast and win and be the guy to beat. So I really respect that about him, and I've done a lot of different types of racing myself, raced some NASCAR stuff, go-kart, some off-road, and now doing the Indy Next Series, so I've always respected that about him, of how he's been able to be. He's such a diverse driver.
Yeah, he's very well respected outside the U.S. also. Okay, your racing goals are Indy 500, Daytona 500, Baja 1000, Dakar, and Le Mans 24-hour races, plus the Daytona. Winning which race will give you the most satisfaction?
I think that's a huge list of races that maybe it would be cool to compete in one day, some of those. But my main focus right now is IndyCar and winning the Indy 500.
Okay. How come no love for Formula One, which we love so much in the palatial studios of F1 Weekly?
I mean, when I was younger, I had dreams. I raced in karting. I went over in Europe and raced in some karting stuff. And F1 was always a thought. But as an American, it's pretty tricky to make that happen. I think you have to move over to Europe very young. And after I did some race there in Europe, I came back and kind of started doing some NASCAR stuff. So I think kind of F1 for the most part was out of the question. I think you kind of have to be on a very step-by-step path from a young age. And that's not really what I did when I was younger. So I think just, I mean, I love watching F1. I think F1's super cool. But I think IndyCar kind of might suit me a little bit better. And my family's got more history here. And I kind of like how IndyCar seems a little bit more driver-based rather than the manufacturer and team-based like you see in F1 a lot. But I respect F1. I think it's definitely the pinnacle of motorsports in the world, and it's super cool.
Okay, speaking of European racing scene, what kart racing tracks did you race there, and what were your best moments there?
So I did a few one-off races, and then I did the Academy Trophy Series, the series where it's kind of an arrive-a-drive, and they select a couple of drivers from each country. And I think Stingray was selected, who races IndyCar now, but I don't think he was able to go, that I can remember. But I raced at Zuera in Spain. I did pretty well, and then got crashed in the final. I think my best finish was fourth or fifth over there, and then I think I finished 10th in the Rock Cup finals when I was a little bit younger. I only did about eight or nine races over there, but did a lot of karting stuff in the U.S., won the Pro Tour National Championship here. So, we did a lot of karting, but didn't really ever move over to Europe and really focus on that goal.
Yo, SCUSA Championship, I believe, was in 2014. What was the main difference that you saw or experienced between go-karting in the U.S. and the depth of talent compared to what you experienced in Europe?
I think, obviously, in Europe, I think you just have, it's kind of the hotspot. So you have these people from all these different countries, from Australia, obviously kids all over Europe at the time, Russia, the United States, like the best couple guys from each place were migrating and going and racing karting in Europe. So it really made Europe, the depth of competition there in karting was really insane. And I went over there and I was fast right away, but it was a different driving style. Like over here, we have a lot more blocking and defending rules, and it seems like people are more willing to kind of work together. And you go over there and it's all out chaos. I remember the first race that I ever did there, people were swerving across the track, and I was like, my eyes were open. It was a whole different deal. So I got used to that over, and I think it definitely made me a better race car driver.
Now, after karting, you raced in California and finishing second in the NASCAR Menard Series West in 2019. What made you go oval racing and not into something like U.S. Formula 4 or Junior Series road racing?
I've always loved NASCAR as a kid and respected the oval racing. And I came over, I was doing some karting stuff, and I was kind of looking to transition into cars, and we kind of wanted to try some stuff. I did some Skip Barber, drove a Skip Barber car, and then I went and tested a Legend car, and I really liked that. So I started doing some Legend races while I was still karting and was winning like all the races there and doing really well. So I kind of made a decision. I thought there was a big future in NASCAR, which I still think there is. But yeah, I mean, I really liked the oval racing. It was super competitive. And when I needed to make the decision of what I wanted to move into in cars, I knew someone who had a late model team that had a really good team for me to be and go race in California near where I live in Arizona. And it just seemed like the right move for me. And at the time, I was really set on NASCAR.
What came more naturally to you, oval racing or road racing?
I would say probably road racing, just because from the age of about 9 years old, I started racing go-karts on road courses. So I kind of grew up focusing on road courses. And then when I went to the oval racing stuff, it was a little bit of a transition. I think especially when you're a kid, you race on all these road courses where there's a lot of grass and runoff, and then now you're having to run a stock car with 500, 600 horsepower inches from the wall, and it takes commitment, and you're racing side by side, and those people aren't afraid to use the bumper or their doors to pass you. So I think that I had to learn in that aggression a little bit, but I think ultimately it didn't make me more of an aggressive race car driver.
Last year here in Alabama, you won in US Pro 2000 Series. How important was that victory, and can you do the same this year in Indy Lights?
Yeah, it was super cool to get my first, it was only my second Formula car race ever, and to come out and win here last year at Barber Motorsports Karts was super cool. I think this year we're starting 13th, so it's a little bit of a different show and definitely a more stacked field of competition. So I think the plan for today is to just try to stay clean and kind of capitalize on people's mistakes and try to make our way up in the top 10 and maybe more near the top 5 today.
There are several drivers who are in their second, third year in the championship. As a rookie, what kind of a result will make you happy, and who will be your main challenges for Rookie of the Year honor?
So I think today, with a little further starting position and it being a pretty tricky passing track, the goal is to kind of work our way into the top 10 today. I think throughout this year, it's just the main goal is to learn and to eventually be up in contention fighting for wins and poles by the later half of the season. With a new team, Kate Motorsports, we're progressing quickly, but it's still a learning experience for us, getting the cars right, getting my driving right. So that's the main goal, is to kind of keep learning. It's only my second year in open wheel racing, transitioning from the stock car stuff, so pretty much all these guys have 4, 5, 6 years at least, and maybe like you said, 2 to 3 years in Indy next. So it's definitely an experience thing a little bit, but I'm not here to make excuses for myself. It's just if they can do it, then I can do it. I've been fast and won in anything I've raced before, so it might just take a little bit more time at this level, but I'm pretty confident it's going to happen.
Next question, very important. Your grandpa won the 1963 Indy 500, and last year you were on the podium in the road course races at Indy. Did that give you special chills and a sense of family pride?
Yeah, I think it was super cool. Indianapolis Motor Speedway has obviously got a huge place in our family, and it was cool to get on the podium this last year and almost win. So maybe this year go back and try to get a good result. And I'm really looking forward to running on the oval, though, on the Indy 500 eventually.
Last question. Do you have a favorite driver in Formula One?
In Formula One, I would say, I know he's not necessarily the fan favorite, but I really respect Max Verstappen. I've been following him since he was in karting when I was going over there racing in Europe, and just his mentality. He's so serious and dedicated to racing, and I think he puts a lot of effort into it, and he's a natural race car driver, and he's kind of like an old school racer in a way, and I always respected that, and I think he's so talented. He's someone I kind of watch and try to learn some from stuff the most.
Okay, thank you so much, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Jagger, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Okay, sir, now the big show at the Brickyard, Colley at Indy. Alex Palou became the first driver from Spain to take pole position at Indy. Last year he did an Oscar Piastri on Chip Ganassi and will be leaving his team at the end of the season to go where everybody seems to be going these days, McLaren. You know, I was talking to an IndyCar team owner, one of the smaller teams. I won't take the name, but he says to me, it's hard to get good quality people because McLaren, IndyCar team, keeps hiring people. If they need 15 people, they'll hire 30 people. So McLaren has gobbled up a lot of people. Palu's four-lap average speed was 234.21, and that's hauling some serious booty. This is third consecutive pole position for Ganassi team, as Scott Dixon took pole previous 2 years. If Alex is, you know, all these people are going to McLaren. Alexander Rossi has gone there. Felix Rosenquist is there. They all are, and Pato Ward, they all think they're going to get to Formula One this way. You know what? They are better off staying here because better to be in a winning car than back of the bus operation, just as Daniel Ricciardo. They may send him a text message. If Alex is smart, I think he should do a Jensen Button and tell Zach Brown, you know, I've decided to stay with Chip Ganassi because Chip has a good team, has good sponsor, and he loves the winner. Okay, sir, Dutch driver Rinus VK qualified second and will start second for Ed Carpenter Racing. As you may know, Ed is the stepson of the great messiah of American motor racing, Tony George. Man, you know, we talk about Tony George like this. He destroyed open wheel racing here, which he did. But I do want to say this. I met him once at IndyCar race at Sears Point. I was just walking through and I saw him walking towards his trailer, and I asked him if I could, you know, do a quick 5-minute interview, and he was very nice and polite, so I do thank him for his time that day. Okay, Swedish cat Felix Rosenquist qualified third for Mr. Brown. You've got a lovely team in every series. Sir, any your favorite question? Who do you think will win Indy 500?
Whew, I don't know. Even, let's put it this way. Yeah, Sato-san, he is fast. He's in a good team. He's got the experience. But these young guys, especially Alex Palou, could you imagine winning the 500 could catapult him to his dream job, the back of the bus in Formula One? But no, it's very exciting. And Marcus Ericsson, his team is very, very good. This is a big field. It's exciting. I watch qualifying. Yes, it's going to be a big race. And it's all about strategy and making it to the end without stupid mistakes.
Well, a couple of years ago, I was at that race when Alex Palou was involved in a dogfight with Castro Neves, and it was Castro Neves' experience that got him the win. In very, very intense racing, I have to say. Who's going to win? I don't know. You know, I'm sure there will be a caution with 20 laps to go, and then it becomes a real, real dog-eat-dog war, which I enjoy immensely. But I would like to see a first-time winner like, you know, Alex Palou or Joseph Newgarden. Joseph Newgarden has won championship with Penske Racing. I think he will be a very, very popular guy, and he's an All-American boy anyway from Henderson, Tennessee, I believe. So, and we interviewed him when he was in GP3. And Pato Ward is very talented from Mexico. He will be a good first-time winner. And if Castro Neves wins, that will be his new track record, fifth win. So let's see what happens.
Yes, it's very exciting. Not only that, but it adds a whole new respect for El Machismo, who's done this, led laps. Because when you watch this qualifying at Indy 500, it's intense, they're going fast, and it doesn't take a very big mistake to be in the wall. So it's very impressive stuff. And when you've done both Formula One and the Indy 500, I tip my hat.
Yes, sir. And heartbreak of qualifying was like father, like son. Once upon a time, Bobby Rahal failed to qualify for the Indy 500. I think it was like 30 years ago. On Sunday, his son Graham got bumped out in the closing minutes of the qualifying by his own teammate, Jack Harvey from UK. And we've been following Jack Harvey's career for a long time. We interviewed him when he was in Formula BMW in Europe. But I have to say, Graham took it as a gentleman and did not throw a hissy fit, nor did he call his engine, Indy 2! Ah! And it really reminded of how graceful Felipe Massa was when he lost the championship. So I'm wondering if 20 years later, Graham Rahal is going to say, let me file a lawsuit against my own dad. I had a crappy car. But I'm really looking forward to this race. It's on, you know, for years and years, it used to be on ABC. And they were busy in showing driver's wife's kitchen and remodeling going on in the pool. I was so ridiculous during a race. But let's see what NBC can do, the Peacock Network. And the whole show is now owned by Roger Penske, so look forward to a great and safe race. And you know, today, Catherine Legg had a big crash involving Stefan Wilson. So I hope both are okay, and I hope they can get the cars fixed and get in this race. I am missing Monty from this race, I have to say.
No, he's going to be there. He'll be driving the air dryer.
Oh, wow. And what an irony it would be if Sato-san crashes into that. Because if there are two drivers, they're going to crash into jet dryer. It has to be Montoya or Sato-san. Okay, sir, moving on to more motor racing from around the world. Formula Regional Europe, Barcelona. What a difference a weekend makes. Deutschland Uber-Alles may have found a new dynamic racing leader. Ladies and gentlemen, please say Guten Tag to Tim Tramnitz from Hamburg. After the opening round at Imola last month, Tramnitz was Tiny Tim and tiptoeing through the tulips with only 8 points in the championship. Fast forward to round two in Barcelona over the weekend, and I watched both these races on YouTube, and they are available if anybody is interested. Tim won both races and now leads the championship with 58 points. I say, das future ist wunderbar. Young Italian talent Kimi Antonelli, who is part of Toto's Wolfpack in a Mercedes Junior, was second in both races and is now second in the championship with 54 points. I have a very high rating on Kimi Antonelli because, you know, he is in his first year and only a few points behind Tramnitz. Tramnitz is in the series in his second year. So if Kimi Antonelli wins this race, or wins this championship, or even if he finishes in the top three with some wins, I am sure Toto will bring him into European Formula 3, and that will be a real serious litmus test for this young Italian. Based on performance this and past season where he won two championships in Formula 4, I have a strong feeling Kimi Antonelli is the next big thing from Italy. His truly train has departed on time. Let's hope he can go more than Fisico. Son of Emerson Fittipaldi, Enzo, and son of Alex Wurz, Charlie, are also in this series, but nowhere to be seen near the top 10 in the championship standings at this time. Sir, also in Barcelona, we have FIA Academy for Ladies. The winners are, there were three races. Race 1, Dutch lady Emily de Hughes. Race 2, Amna Al-Khubesi from UAE. Race 3, Swiss Miss Lena Bueller. Top 3 in the championship are Martha Garcia from Viva España, leading with 135 points. Second is Hamda Al-Khubesi. She is the sister of Amna with 94 points. And Lena Bueller is third on 83 points. Now, sir, here is real, sort of early morning wake-up call because of the time difference for Mr. Nick DeFries. Super Formula from Nihon. Kiwi talent and Red Bull Junior Liam Lawson took his second win of the season at Autopolis Circuit, and with that he takes the championship lead. If he wins this championship in his rookie season, then I think Nick DeFries' French and herring will be fried. Sir, interesting thing about track ownership in Japan. Suzuka is owned by Honda, Fuji is owned by Toyota, and the Autopolis track is owned by Kawasaki. Any comments on Liam Lawson, Nick DeFries, or any of the Junior Series, senor?
Very exciting. Well, I was impressed that you're reporting on the FIA Academy for Ladies. And Nasser, I am sure you've already volunteered to lend your services to help them with their annual calendar.
Oh, that's a very good idea.
Gracias, muchacho. You know, you could do like a Pirelli-themed kind of thing going on. Be very exciting and, of course, help them with their careers.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if I do a Pirelli theme calendar, Danica Patrick will offer her services.
Indeed she would, and she is available. Let me know, and I could text that to you.
There you go. Okay, sir, let's do our second interview. This is with Christian Rasmussen. His father is Cal Worthington of Copenhagen, in other words, a car dealer. Christian is a very talented driver and is currently leading the Indy Next Championship, previously known as Indy Lights. This conversation took place at Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago, and my thanks to his PR manager, Mr. Mike Maurini, for making this possible.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway with Mr. Christian Rasmussen, coming all the way from Denmark. Christian, good to meet you. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Always good on a race day. Thank you. Okay, you are leading the championship. Who do you expect as your main challengers for the title?
I think right now, obviously the HMD crew has been super strong all year. So obviously my teammate Nolan Siegel. I think we'll see probably a couple of the Andretti cars coming up to compete as well. But the depth of the field this year is just super, like, it's just a super strong field. So I think there's going to be a lot of challenges for sure.
Now, if a driver is beaten by his teammate, is the pain more than if he's beaten by some guy from the other team?
I think, yeah, almost the pain is more because you know you're in the same car as they are. So, yeah, those are definitely the ones you want to beat the most.
What makes the HMD cars so good?
I don't know. Like, it's just when you look...
The drivers or the team or both?
I think it's both. You know, it's a team effort for sure. Obviously, we've had a lot of good drivers around here, but the cars also permit us to run up front as well. You saw it at Barber, where it was just pure HMD domination all weekend. So it's not as strong this time around, but we're still up there for sure.
Great. Now, if you win the championship, hope you do, will you offer free Danish pastries to the competition and make the losing sweet?
Say that again, sorry?
If you win the championship, will you offer free Danish pastries to the competition and make their losing sweet?
I don't know about that. We'll see. I mean, I guess I can bring pastries every once in a while.
Yeah, you can make a quick trip to 7-Eleven.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, last year you won races at two great tracks in this country. Your opinion of Road America and Laguna Seca, especially the corkscrew section?
Yeah, no, it's super cool. Both tracks, I've really enjoyed racing in the past. And I look forward to getting back on them again this year, especially with the repavement at Road America this year. It's going to be exciting.
Are you friends with K-Mag and J-Mag?
A little bit. I mean, I used to race for Jan Magnussen when he owned a Danish Formula 4 team. I race for them, and I know Kevin a little bit from just obviously being a race car driver in Denmark. Everyone kind of knows each other. I haven't spoken to them in a while, I will admit, but I know of them, yeah, for sure.
Now, a couple of years ago, there was a strong news and possibility of Danish Grand Prix happening. Do you think any chance of that happening now?
That's hard to say. I don't think Formula One will be going to Denmark, unfortunately. Just because that Denmark is very, you know, green and environmentally focused. So I think getting an F1 race would... My personal opinion is that it would be a huge opportunity for the city, but I don't think that the politicians see it the same way, unfortunately.
Okay. You won Danish and Nordic karting championships. Give us a little background on your karting life and your most memorable moments from those days.
Yeah, I started racing go-karts when I was 5 years old. Started out as just like a Sunday thing with my family. And it was just kind of a snowball effect. Biggest memory from karting was probably when I won the Danish championship in 2015. But yeah, countless of great memories with my family and friends through all those years.
Now, did the interest in racing come from family, or you put the interest of racing in the family?
My dad owns a car dealership, so the interest for cars were always there from a very young age. It was always cars that I would play with as a kid and stuff like that, so it was very natural for me to jump in a kart. It was actually my older cousins on my dad's side that started racing, and then them being a few years older and stuff, my brother and I thought that that would be really cool to try as well. And so we did, and have been racing ever since, pretty much.
I'm a car guy, just curious, what are top-selling brands in Denmark?
Well, the problem is, in Denmark, cars are so expensive.
Tax, right?
Taxes are super high, so we pay 150% sale tax on top of the car's value. So it's a lot of, smaller cars, really.
Okay. You did 3 years in Formula 4, two in Denmark and one in the US. I have two questions on this issue. First, how did you find the depth of competition in Formula 4 in the US as compared to Formula 1 in Denmark?
It was definitely, I mean, first of all, there was a lot more cars over here racing in the US in Formula 4, which was definitely a cool experience for me. Just coming from Denmark, where we really only have three tracks, and you kind of go around and you circle around, and when you've done all the three tracks, you go back around. So it's basically two rounds at each track back home. So it was cool coming to the US, obviously racing against new drivers on bigger circuits, and have actually, you know, only one race per circuit. So that was super cool, definitely a cool experience, and the right choice for me.
The other question I have is, what made you decide to race in America and not continue in Europe or go to Japanese, Super Formula Series?
For me, it was very much a budget thing. After I did Formula 4 in Denmark with Magnussen racing experience, I was kind of at a crossroad and kind of had to choose what direction I wanted to take my career. And we were looking at it, and we had offers in Asia and Europe and a lot of different series around the world. But we kind of took a step back and looked at it and saw, okay, where do I have the biggest chance of becoming a professional race car driver? And we saw the U.S. with the scholarships available and stuff like that, that was going to be my best shot at it. And that's kind of why we chose the U.S.
Yeah, I think you made a good choice, and the results are showing that. Okay, in 2018, you won more races than any other driver, but finished third in the U.S. Formula 4 Championship. How did you take this at that time? Positive or not so positive?
I think if you would have asked me before I went into the series, I think a third place would probably have been a good result for me. I think whenever I came over here and kind of showed everyone and myself how fast and competitive we are, I think for me the third place in the championship was a little bit, disappointing.
Okay.
Also, especially because, like you say, I had the most race wins out of everyone. We had the speed, but we just had a little bit too many mechanical failures during the year to make a championship run possible. But it was still, looking back at it, it was still a good result.
After this, you spent 2 years in US Formula 2000, winning the championship with 9 wins from 17 races in 2020. Tell us about this very impressive performance, and who were some of your biggest competitors at that time?
No, it was two really good years. I mean, I came over here in 2018 with Jay Howard Driver Development, continued to USF 2000 in 2019 with Jay again, and backed that up in 2020 with Jay again. So yeah, just some of the biggest competitors, I think Rhys Gold was strong, Eduardo Barrichello was strong, there's a few good guys, but yeah, it was a super strong effort from the team and from me, and kind of what got me on the path towards IndyCar that I'm on now. You know, I'm out of a very regular family, so without having the scholarships to move up to the next level, I would never have gotten into Indy Pro 2000, and without winning that championship, I wouldn't have gotten into Indy Lights or Indy Next. Yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate with choosing the US in the first place, and I haven't regretted my choice at all.
See, the good thing here is if you tell them you're from Denmark, they might think that's a town in Minnesota. Have you noticed that?
That's right. Not everyone knows what Denmark is, but then when you say Europe, Scandinavia, then they kind of, you know, get circled in and they kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, the reason I said this comment was made to me many years ago. I used to live in San Diego and I met a Danish guy, and he said he used to live in Oklahoma. And when he said he was from Denmark, they thought it was some town, you know. And some of the Michigan State.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, speaking of Jay Howard, I spoke to him at Sebring a few months ago, and I asked him who have been the best drivers, and, you know, very talented and also technically inclined. The first name he took and repeated was you.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely, I went through the Jay Howard school of racing, I guess you could say. You know, we were strong right off the bat, but being with Jay all those years, working with Jay closely, him being an IndyCar and a very experienced racer himself, helped me for sure and kind of formed me into the race car driver I am today. Obviously, we never stop developing, but that was definitely some good years of developing for me racing with Jay.
Okay. In 2021, you won second championship in a row, Indy Pro 2000, and you won 7 of 18 races. Which victory gave you the most satisfaction?
The most satisfaction was one of two, I would say. Road America was super cool because we had two races that weekend, and I had a car basically drive over me in the first race, so I DNF'd. But then I backed that up with a win in the next race, so coming off of no momentum, off a DNF in the race before, and then going out to win was, I think, quite special. Also, the oval at Lucas Oil Raceway stands out to me. We really didn't have the car to win that race, but being just a little bit better in traffic than everyone else, we managed to pull off a race win. So that one stands out to me as well.
And speaking of Lucas Oil Raceway, your first experience on the oval track, was that easy peasy for you or fast and freaky?
No, it definitely took some getting used to. Coming from Europe, we don't do any ovals at all. So 2019 was really the first year of ovals, but I've kind of learned to love them, really. I think the racing is super cool. It's very different from the road courses, and I think it's very car dependent on whether you do good or bad. But no, I think having a good car in the oval and you're able to race, I think it's really, really, really cool.
Okay, Indy next is the final frontier before IndyCar racing. So the question is, are you ready to rumble in the Indy 500 next year?
I am ready to rumble in the Indy 500 and IndyCar next year. I think I've been for a while now. Obviously, I've always been a huge believer in being ready for the next step before you take it. But I truly believe that I am ready for IndyCar now, and I think I've shown how competitive I can be in Indy Lights. I keep killing it, Indy Lights. Indy Next. And as well as the road to Indy. So yeah, like, that's definitely the plan, making the move from Indy Next to IndyCar next year, and we'll just see where we end up this year and see what happens.
Danish pastry will go very well with milk.
That's right.
Okay, now while racing in the US, are you based somewhere here like Indianapolis or Florida as most drivers, or are you flying from Kastrup to JFK before every race?
No, I'm based here now. I live just north of the Speedway here in Indianapolis, in a town called Carmel, which has kind of become my new home. I've been more or less full-time here this year and most of last year as well, so I'm kind of getting acclimated to the whole US lifestyle, and I'm really enjoying it over here.
Have you heard of a place called Solvang in California?
Yes, I have.
Have you been there?
I have not been there, but I've heard that it's like a Danish little city. But I haven't been there. I want to go.
Yeah, you should check out next time you go to Laguna Seca. Yeah. Okay, the best part of meeting you, sir, apart from you being very talented, is we share the same favorite driver with the yellow helmet. What do you remember most about Ayrton Senna and any races that really stand out for you?
Well, obviously, I don't remember too much because I wasn't...
Well, there is YouTube.
There's YouTube, but I wasn't really born at the time. But for me, what really stands out about Ayrton was how much he did for the community. Obviously, he was a very, very talented race car driver, but I think everything he did for his, you know, community, his country, I think was very special.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Christian, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, oh yes indeed, A1GP is going to be back in town. Pretty exciting, huh?
Oh yeah, this is very good. The return of A1GP, the World Cup of Motorsports. You know, there was a Team Pakistan, Team Indonesia, Team Switzerland, It was very nice. You know, a lot of different countries. That are, of course, Team India also, Team Lebanon. So Mr. Marcin Budkowski, who has worked for Renault, McLaren, Ferrari, and the FIA, is reported to be working on a project to bring A1GP racing series back in action, featuring 20 nations in a spec series. They say you are known by the company you keep. Let's take a look at who else is involved here. There is a bloke called Sir Keith Mills. He was involved in the 2012 Olympics in London town. David White, he was president of French media group Lagardère. Now departed, Monsieur Jean-Luc Lagardère was an executive at Matra, and to improve the image of rocket and missile maker, he brought Matra into motor racing. And their sound is still heard and loved by motor racing aficionados. And last but not the least, Mike Gascoigne is an advisor. And I wonder if he will come to work in a Piper Cub or a Porsche Cayman. Time will tell. Apparently talks are already underway with chassis and engine manufacturers. The original A1GP series was started by Prince Makhdoom of Dubai. Also involved was Tony Teixeira, a man from Angola with gold mining operations in South Africa. What can go wrong? The very first race of the original series took place in September 2005 at Brands Hatch. Both the sprint and feature races were won by an upcoming young talent with pedigree who would go on to make quite an impact in the world of motor racing, Nelson Piquet Jr. And you know, Mr. Rogers, yours truly, I was at that event, and I could not believe this is a new series. There were like 60,000 spectators, and a friend of mine from New York was there, and he also could. When we went to the parking lot, wow, it was jam-packed, and he says, wow, first event and so many people here. So that's the motorsports passion in UK, a little different than Baku. Your thoughts on A1GP, and of course, we have to remember, A1GP were at Laguna Seca, and this was the only event where the number of competitors was more than the number of spectators. And you were there. You can back me up on this.
I was there. We interviewed. This was the early F1 Weekly days, the beginning. We were all young. We interviewed the U.S. team. Brian Herta was there. It was absolutely hilarious. Jos Verstappen, an unhappy man, as usual, was screaming to his engineer. And there was laughter in the two Dutch people sitting in the grandstands. It was freezing, but it was the beginning of F1 Weekly. It was our first big, big media event, and we were excited.
We meaning you and Steve Farr, because you and I had not met as of that race.
Correct. There was no Nasser Hamid. It was Steve Farr. Desiree had not been convicted of crimes, and David Tapia was along as the producer.
Yeah, I remember the rain and the snow there. That was unbelievable. And I met quite a few drivers. Jos Verstappen was there, and I met these two French drivers. You know, who was that guy? Both of them were pretty big in GP2. One of them raced in Australia in GT, and the other used to race in, I just can't remember the name now. He was racing for Toyota, and I remember asking him, where do you come from in France? And the one guy said, you know, Manicourt, where the track is, French Grand Prix, and Alexander Primat. Alexander Primat said, when I asked him, where are you from, he goes, Paris. Now, he was total Francais, and those were the good days, very, very interesting.
And we have to mention that Nico Hülkenberg has already written a letter to this gentleman asking for his paycheck.
For his winning the championship. You know, interesting you say that. Nico Hülkenberg at that time was not with Team Germany, and I think there was another guy, and I met him several times in Europe. He was the driver. And Willy Weber had the franchise for Team Germany, if you remember.
I don't remember anything, Nasser.
Okay, sir, speaking of Angola, we come to Musical Mondial. It brings us to, today we have a song about this country, beautiful, oil-rich country, Angola. I watched a documentary one day, and it says the oil is produced in the province of Cabinda, and this can only happen in Africa and third world countries. And the guy said, the province has a chronic shortage of oil, petroleum for the everyday people. And maybe a few months after, I'm not making this up, a few months later, I was on a flight from SFO to LHR, Heathrow, and there was a guy sitting next to me wearing the Sonangol cap, which is the oil company. And I asked him, hey, I saw this documentary a few months ago. Is it true? And he looked at me, he says, yes, it is true. Then we had a long chat about Angola. But anyway, here we have Miss Cesaria Ivora with a beautiful song about Angola. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy.
Angola, Angola, ik posa, paninhos catamatam. Bem com hora para banhar caminho. Angola, Angola, e força. A minha oscata matando. Bem com hora para banhar caminho. Esconvivência de senhores vivência. A ciência de uma consequência. A existência de extravagância. Esconvivência de senhores vivência. A ciência de uma consequência. A existência de extravagância.